The AC Podcast is a ministry of Apologetics Canada and is supported by the generous donations of our listeners. If you would like to partner with us in this ministry, please go to apologeticscanada.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Apologetics Canada podcast. This is Steve Kim.
Terry Crosby.
Yep, it's the two of us again. Andy is quite busy right now doing his PhD work, so he's taking a break from podcasting this week. Terry, what do you have for us today?
Yeah, I got this story coming from the Netherlands. They seem to be ahead of us in a lot of different areas.
Yes.
And as we get into our discussion today.
For good or ill.
Yeah. So they've been ahead of the game in the whole, homosexual, transgender thing. But they're ahead in the game in paving roads.
Where is this going, Terry?
The Netherlands is paving its roads with recycled toilet paper.
Recycled toilet paper.
Yes. There's a lot of pros to it. It helps with traction.
All right.
It's good for draining water, and it stabilizes the mixture in the asphalt. So it's better coming together, and it stays together better. But before you get really grossed out, they actually, put it through a purifying process, but it's the whole cellulose within that toilet paper product itself.
Uh-huh.
So, they get rid of all the excrement and stuff like that. But I found it interesting that how innovative, people were getting, and we have to, and we have to recycle. So they're recycling toilet paper. You know, they could use it to, make napkins again,
mm-hmm.
but most people don't want any association with that, right? They are paving roads with it. I mean, that's ahead of the game. That's ahead of us.
All right. On that note, in Andy's absence, what we as in Terry and I decided to do was go to a certain meeting Tuesday night right here in town where we live. This will be of particular interest to parents in BC and probably in Alberta as well. But you've probably heard of, or maybe not, because Terry, you were saying that this was the first time you heard about this.
This was the first time I came in contact with this. Yeah. I mean, I don't have kids in school right mm-hmm. now at all. Yeah. So, that's not on my radar and, policies, procedures coming through there. But this is the first time I heard about this.
Yeah, so what we're talking about here is the SOGI curriculum that's being implemented in BC and in Alberta as well. This curriculum is meant for K-12 children. And there was a meeting Tuesday night put on by a group called Parents United Canada. I believe they are affiliated or they belong to this parent group called Culture Guard. And they are very much opposed to the SOGI curriculum, and they wanted to bring people together, especially parents together, and inform them about what this is and like how we might stand against it. Because they believe that this is not a good thing for our kids. SOGI stands for Sexual Orientation and Gender Identity, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, two-spirited, and anything in between. Like you hear LGBTQIA, or sometimes it's like after LGBT, there can be any number of things, right?
Plus, plus, plus.
Yeah, LGBTQ especially. After that, just anything can be added to it.
And it seems to me like they want our kids to know all these as well, right?
Well, at least through this curriculum, they will make the distinction between biological sex and gender as social construct, and then, gender identity and gender expression, all these things. Which many people disagree with that distinction, right? The idea that gender is just purely socially constructed, that it has nothing to do with your biology. I disagree with that notion, but that is what is going to be taught through this curriculum. Number two, SOGI is a public and political agenda that uses coercive techniques to sexualize children. Now, this is from Parents United Canada.
Right.
This is how they are describing
interpreting
this curriculum. I'm not saying necessarily that this interpretation is wrong. I'm just giving it to you as, you know, this is what they're saying. Number three, Soji claims there are no boys and girls and embraces gender fluidity. So, I mean, already we're seeing this, right? Even in daycares, they don't call children boys and girls anymore. They'll just use the neutral words, friends. I don't really have that big of an issue there. Anyway, number four, Soji recruits, aided by the BC Teachers Union, are then Soji leaders. And so what we're told is that these teachers are being recruited to be the Soji leads in these different schools throughout British Columbia. Number five, Soji leads, mastermind indoctrination of the Soji sex activists' agenda without parental or school trustees' approval. Now, we'll go over that a little bit later. Number six, Soji leaders rely on faulty statistics, emotional grabs, and bully tactics to deceive their agenda onto your child's teacher and into the program. Number seven, Soji lessons plans have been created by sex activists. So there is some distinction that's being made between your run-of-the-mill LGBTQ community member, and then there's the what they call the sex activists that are a little bit more, you know, they have a political agenda that they want to push and all that kind of stuff. So this is at least how Parents United Canada is characterizing the Soji curriculum. Yeah. And I share a lot of their concerns.
Yes.
And so we went there, and there were two presenters, really. One was Paul Dirks. He's a pastor from New Westminster. And he's just very well researched in the area of sexual orientation and gender identity and what the research is saying, what the evidence is suggesting and all of that kind of stuff. In fact, when Bill C-16 was being discussed, he testified before the Senate. And you
before
can
the
find,
Senate, yeah.
Yeah, yep. You can find it on YouTube and see his testimony there. And then the second one was Carrie Simpson. She spoke more specifically on the Soji curriculum and kind of the politics behind it. What did you think of that whole thing, Terry?
Yeah, I mean, the information that he gave us, the statistics.
That's Paul Dirks.
Paul Dirks. Yeah. Very good. I mean, he was well researched in that area. And a lot of the studies that he brought to us were not even from Christians.
Right.
Some of them were actually from...
Yeah, from within the LGBTQ community.
Right. Yeah. And so that was interesting as well. There were so many statistics and stuff that we don't have time to go through this, but there is... Well, we could put up a link, right, for that one page of his that gave us all that information back to us, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And there is also a YouTube video that you can find. So one of the concerns that I have is that basically what this curriculum aims to do is to normalize, you know, family configurations or gender identities and different things like that. The gender identities that are not, you know, strictly binary, male and female, or man and woman, boy or girl, that sort of thing. Personally, this is where I stand, is that I don't have a problem with adults who necessarily want to say, you know, I'm a man trapped in a woman's body. I'm going to call myself a man, even though biologically I'm female. Now, if a grown person says that, I'm personally not going to go out of my way to stop that person from doing that. Or if two men want to live together, you know, in a marital relationship, I'm not going to go out there and stop them from doing that. They can make up their own minds. They're their own persons. Now, when it comes to teaching
children...
And
you disagree with that, but you were reflecting yourself in a loving way, in the sense that, you know, they...
I'll let them be.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so if that's what they want to do, fine. Yeah. Do that. Whatever. I don't care. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, in the sense that, you know, even though I may disagree with that, but, you know, they have the freedom to do that. We live in a free country.
Yes.
But now the question is, it gets it's a bit different for me when you start bringing that into the school system and then start teaching kids that this is normal, that this is not even just normal, this is to be accepted and celebrated.
And this is being implemented right at kindergarten.
K-12.
We're talking like 5-6-year-olds.
Yeah, so it starts there, and I read through the primary school curriculum. In fact, you can find all of that on their Soji curriculum website. But it starts off with, using the word gay as an insult is not okay. So it's the anti-bullying aspect of it, right?
Yeah.
And so I was reading that. I'm like, yes, I actually agree with this,
yeah.
Right? I don't think we should bully anybody. My concern is that this is, for example, if a transgender boy is getting bullied, okay, then deal with it as a bullying instance. But in this case, what's happening is it's bullying plus, mm-hmm. right? It's something else. Now, so then the bullying is being used to discuss these issues with sexual orientation and transgender and things like that. And then that I'm even fine with. But then the next step where it becomes normalized and you are taught to celebrate it and things like that, that's where I start having issues,
mm-hmm. right?
And so if it's a bullying instance, absolutely deal with it as a bullying instance. Just yep. don't go way beyond that to say, now you need to celebrate this person's sexual
and they're putting that up
identity.
As kind of a hallmark, as this is, you know, why we should implement this other stuff into the curriculum. Mm-hmm. You know, they really kind of like anti-bullying, we can't have that. Well, no, we can't at
absolutely
any level.
Not. Yeah.
Whatever situation it is,
yeah.
right? But it seemed like that was kind of their hallmark of getting this into the schools.
Mm-hmm. And there are many things that are concerning to me, especially as a father who has a little girl who's about to go off to kindergarten next year. I'm like, okay, why didn't I hear anything about this in the last couple of years that this was being developed and being implemented? Right? Why didn't I hear anything in the news or anything like that? Like I heard about the Soji curriculum very recently.
Yeah.
And then I find out that this actually has been in the works for a little while.
A number of years, for yeah. sure. Yeah. I mean, as of like last September, things were already well into the works mm-hmm. of moving this into the schools. And then March came of this year, and that's when things were implemented within the classrooms with leaders mm-hmm. as well. So, yeah, I mean, it surprised me. It yeah. really did.
Why does this concern us so much? Isn't this just a political issue? I don't think it's just a political issue, right? Especially as Christians and people of other faiths, I'm sure, have problems with this.
Yeah.
Many Muslims.
Yeah.
Many Sikhs and many Hindus and Jews.
Yeah.
Really, this is a secular ideology that is being imposed on everybody. Remember back when, especially down in the U.S., when the whole same-sex marriage debate was raging, you know, around the time that Obergefell decision came down. Social conservatives were laughed at whenever they said, if we open up the definition of marriage, the next thing is going to be this, the next thing is going to be that. And then the response from the progressives or, you know, leftists or however you want to characterize them, right? By the way, like politically, I took this political compass thing. I'm apparently more centrist. I thought I was farther right, but I'm apparently centrist. So,
all right.
So when I say leftist, I don't necessarily mean it in a negative way. I just want to make that clear.
Yeah.
So then, you know, the people on the left, our progressive friends, have been saying, you know, oh, who's talking about all of these things that you're mentioning, right? You're just fear-mongering. This doesn't affect anybody else. There are men and women who just want to live with whoever they want to, whoever they love, right? Unfortunately, social conservatives have been vindicated, I think, in a lot of these ways. It has gone beyond just, okay, you do your thing. Now this is making their way into our school systems. Now we're going to indoctrinate an entire generation of children to think like we do, regardless of your religious beliefs. As much as people say that secularism is a neutral stance, it is not.
Right.
It is being imposed on yeah. our children.
Yeah. And the more I read about this within the last, you know, few days, it seems like this curriculum really came under the radar of so many people, you know? It wasn't brought out into the light for any kind of debate or talk about or this is what we think and we need to implement this.
And if you look at how this is being worked out, like it's pervasive.
Yeah.
Right? This is supposed to be worked into just about every subject.
Yeah.
Right. In K-12 education, you know, all these children will be reading from books like Heather Has Two Mommies or things like that. And then they're basically taught to accept this as normal and even celebrate it. Even though technically this is optional, really, I have a friend who is in Alberta right now. He's a teacher. He actually sent me their curriculum, all concerned, right? Because this guy, this friend, he's Christian, and what's in this curriculum, he can't, in good conscience, good moral conscience, teach this stuff. So I looked at some of the fine prints and things like that. It does mention in bigger print or whatever that this is optional, but then there's this asterisk, and if you follow it, it mentions that there have been litigations over not doing this.
Yeah.
Right. So it's almost like, you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, it's optional, but right?
Yeah. I mean, looking at this on Facebook, it seems to be coming out a little bit more right now for some reason. Well, because of this meeting we went to, I guess. But even some of the teachers that are commenting on these Facebook posts are saying, I hadn't heard of this yet.
Yeah.
Right? Wouldn't you think the teachers?
Of all people.
Of all people.
And I'm thinking to myself, I think, I mean, this is just a wild guess. Just take it and make of it what you will. But I think the reason that this was so under the radar is probably because people who are trying to implement this know that there is going to be significant resistance to this.
Yeah.
Right? Because what is at least being attempted is to make this a very pervasive, like it's as I understand it, as I hear from the presentation that we were at a couple nights ago, this is being mandated by the Ministry of Education.
Yeah.
Which apparently rarely happens.
It says that right on the SOGI website for sure. Like, you know, this is already checked, you know, by the BC.
So this is what I'm thinking. Common sense dictates that something so controversial as this, and we're talking about some rigorous controversy here, right?
Yeah.
Common sense dictates that something so controversial should be optional, but this is all but mandatory. That is my concern, that this is coming down so hard.
So I think, I mean, what we're asking, I think, in this podcast is that you check it out.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. Inform yourself.
Inform yourself about this. I mean, it's new to me and, you know, new to Steve in the last few months or whatever, but go on their website, you know, look through their documentation. They're easy to find. Like, I mean, SOGI123 is all you pretty much have to put
search
for. I mean, this is political as well. I mean, you know, we have to do our part in the sense of if we don't agree with something, we need to be informed. We need to write the letters, you know. We need to make our voice known that this is not acceptable to us.
Or should we? Because, I mean, I throw that question in because I find that some Christians,
they don't want to touch the political stuff?
Yeah, because that's not how we spread the gospel or, you know.
Right.
And my personal take on it is that that is a very narrow view of our lives.
Yeah.
The gospel is not heard in isolation. How we shape our culture will impact how the gospel is received. Now, this is an insight that I got from William Lane Craig when he's talking about the role of apologetics, because often people think it's just a tool for evangelism. It's more than that. And one of the things that he mentions is that it shapes society and culture. And what do I mean by the gospel not being heard in isolation? The example that William Lane Craig uses is if you were to approach somebody in, say, Red Deer, Alberta, right, and approach somebody and say,
I'm going there this weekend.
Are you? You have family there, don't
I do,
you?
Yeah.
So if you were to approach somebody in Red Deer, Alberta, and say, would you like to consider becoming a devotee of Hare Krishna? People will just stare at you going, but if you were to go say the same thing in a place like New Delhi, India, people will probably take that a lot more seriously.
Yeah.
Right? What's the difference? Well, one place is shaped in such a way that this actually becomes a viable intellectual option.
Yeah.
Whereas in the other place, it's not. And so I think politics, it's the same thing. By us participating in the political sphere, in the public square, we're going to shape culture. And my hope is that our culture will remain the kind of a place where the gospel of Jesus Christ becomes a viable intellectual option, not something – because, I mean, if you go to Europe today and you just come across a random person on the street and say, you know, do you believe in God or do you believe in Jesus Christ? They'll look at you like you came from Mars, right? Like not just because you're a stranger, but because for them, believing in God is like – or believing in Jesus is like believing in a tooth fairy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think in many ways, even something like this will shape our environment in which the gospel is heard.
Yeah, we definitely have to give Christianity a voice mm-hmm. as individuals within our culture, right? I mean, we have the opportunity in a democratic society mm-hmm. to speak up about that. And that is a way to bring our views forward. And, you know, we have that opportunity and we should be politically engaged.
I agree.
I mean, that's probably another podcast, yeah. A whole podcast, but.
There was another big concern with this curriculum. I mean, quite honestly, this political agenda that's being pushed in our schools is that that whole confidentiality part.
Yes, that was a big red flag.
Yeah, my flag went straight up. I'm just
straight
like.
Up. I'm very like, high in the air.
Yeah. So, Terry, why don't you tell us what this is about?
Yeah. So, I mean, the children have the opportunity to disclose to the leaders within this curriculum what they identify with.
Gender-wise.
Gender-wise.
Or sexual orientation.
Yeah. Within the school, within this close setting of these leaders. And from that does not have to be disclosed to the parents at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, that's hugely concerning to me because I probably mentioned this encounter a number of times before, but when I was at this one youth retreat, this pansexual girl came up to me. Well, she identified herself as pansexual and said she hasn't told her family, she hasn't told her church. The school is the only place where she came out, really, right?
Wow, yeah.
And so for a young lady like that, the school will not notify the parents of anything like that. So it keeps the parents in the dark and it divides the family, really. It doesn't allow the family to actually work through the issue. It just allows the issue to fester. The parents are really just caught off guard and they have no idea what to do about this.
Well, it's pulling the whole parental rights right out from under...
And authority, yeah.
And authority from them.
Yeah.
Which is very concerning.
Yeah, I'm thinking to myself, you know, in the absence of any evidence that the parents really are abusive,
yeah,
why would you keep something like that from the parents?
Yeah. I think as time goes on, we're getting more data, more research into this. Mm-hmm. I mean, the latest story that came out this past week, it was the new taboo. More people regret sex change and want to detransition. Mm-hmm. And I think Paul mentioned that last the other night as well, that yeah. word, right?
Yeah.
A lot of them are going back to what they originally were. And because they were experiencing depression and, you know, feelings of inadequacy, that kind of stuff, they decided as time went on that they did not want to identify as what they thought they wanted to.
Right. So then just imagine from the perspective of a social conservative – when you open up the school curriculum to something like this, right, and you are actually encouraging your students to experiment with this sort of thing. So from the perspective of social conservatives, this is tantamount to child abuse.
Yeah.
Especially because, you know, we're seeing a lot of these people that are detransitioning and things like that. And it's quite heartbreaking to see that.
I have a hard time, I mean, basically letting the state parent. Mm-hmm. That's in essence what they're trying to do, right?
Yeah.
They're taking that all our right and authority away from us.
Yeah, and politicians on the left, typically, right, on the left in the United States and in Canada, they don't hesitate to say that the state is the better parent.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Than the parents themselves. And so if the government comes to me and says, they're the better parent, and so they're going to take custody of my child.
Yeah.
Oh, you can expect some fight.
Yeah.
Right? I think that's the same way for most parents.
Yeah.
You know, almost, I would say almost all parents, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right there, I'm just like, well, if that's the way this culture is going, then this culture is on its way to suicide because this is going to greatly weaken families. And guess what? Family is logically prior to the state. Yeah. Before the state ever was, there was family.
Yeah.
And so if the if the state comes along and wants to replace family, it's not going to go well for you. What the state at best can do is just recognize that natural unit called family and just recognize it, not define it. And so that is yet another concern, right? So obviously there are a lot of concerns.
I mean, we have this kind of political side, mm-hmm. right? I know we want to talk about a few other things. Mm. I mean, as a Christian, how do we live in this society? Mm. And I know we're talking to somebody yesterday, and she was basically saying, yeah, how do we address this to our kids as well at such a young age? I mean, that could be another topic as well. But what, as Christians today in this society that is moving along so quickly, this is really fast stuff within the last 5 years that has developed.
It should be a two-front effort, I think. One political, one within the family. So I think politically, we should get involved. I know some Christians are kind of averse to the idea of getting involved politically, but I think we should. So then secondly, I think it should be from within the family in the sense that you know, we need to educate our children about what's going on out there. Now, one of the things that one of the suggestions that was made at the meeting, one of the more helpful bits that I walked away with was just reinforcing in our kids, what's great about being a girl? What's great about being a boy, right? Because what we're told is that transgenderism is more pronounced within the female population than in the male population. And one of the reasons that was cited was because women generally have to fight against the media and what they're telling them about body image and things like that. And so they're more under pressure than men to try to attain that ideal body type, the vast majority of whom can't do that. So then it's that much easier for them to move over, to take that one extra step. So it just kind of makes them a little bit more prone to that. Not that every woman who transitions, that is why. I'm not saying that. But this cultural phenomenon would make it easier for women to make that decision, right? So what we want to do is basically talk about what's great about being a girl, what's great about being a boy. So that with my girl, for example, I would probably want to talk frequently with her about what's great about being a girl. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, like you should just impose certain traditional gender roles to this. I think I want to make the distinction between gender roles and gender.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause there are a lot of things that women do nowadays that are not typically within the traditional gender roles, right? But they're women nonetheless.
Mm-hmm. What is our response to the LGBTQ community as Christians? I don't think our response to them, and I'm going to go back in history here with the church, has not been positive, right?
That's where I think many churchgoers just kind of botched it, really. Yeah. For one, we didn't know how to communicate these to our friends in the LGBTQ community, and we didn't do it very kindly.
No.
Let's just put it out there. And we've, in a lot of ways, they were persecuted.
Yeah.
They meaning, you know, LGBTQ people.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It seems to me like there's still a perception out there that these people can get over it.
Some people definitely still believe, oh, being a gay is a completely, you know, it's by choice and things like that. I don't agree with that.
I mean, I don't know if you remember the book Unchristian. It was about a decade ago.
Yeah, Dave Kinnaman.
That's right. One of their stats in there was 9 out of 10 from the ages of 16 to 29 believe Christians are anti-homosexual. 9 out of 10. I mean, I think that at that point in time, mm-hmm. has now brought us to this mm-hmm. point in time where there's a backlash towards us as intolerant and extreme, right? I don't think we've addressed that issue in a loving way at all. So we are...
Whether that is true or not, whether the church has actually persecuted gays or not, and I do acknowledge that in many ways the church has, I think it's undeniable that we have done that. But, you know, whether you agree with that or not, what that shows is that we have an image problem.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
We have an image problem.
Yeah.
And so then when we bring up these issues with the general public, we should keep that in mind. One of the complaints that I had about that meeting a couple of nights ago was that maybe the message was good, but the second presenter, I thought she just completely botched the message because of her manners and the way she communicated it.
And rhetoric, yeah.
And the rhetoric, yeah. I mean, I get that she needs to inspire people. She's trying to galvanize people and all that kind of stuff. But it's not going to help mocking certain
there
people.
There was questionable jokes.
There were some
really
disturbed me. I took it straight up as mocking.
Yeah.
You're a little bit more charitable in this than I am. But see, and normally I am pretty charitable about this kind of stuff. But even when I said, I was like, that just sounds to me like straight up mocking.
Yeah. I'm going to have to strongly agree with myself from a couple of podcasts ago.
All right.
That, you know, I think we really have dehumanized. I really feel that we have not acted in a manner that is Christian.
Yeah.
And I'm putting it out there because I think we've got a long ways to go as Christians within this culture to make that connection. I mean, I think the way forward is, how do we stay orthodox in our belief and our belief in the Bible, but have these relationships with your neighbor? Like, how do we forge those two together, staying faithful? Because we do not want to go with the pendulum that's going swinging all the way to the other side.
Yeah.
It's those two things that are going to have to walk side by side. And we don't feel comfortable, I don't think, still at that point in our Christian history right now. I don't know.
I tend to agree with that. I think the challenge is that because we have this image problem, anything that we say can be construed as hate.
Yeah.
And so that makes things that much more difficult to build bridges.
Yeah.
And so even though I mean well, and everybody who knows me knows that I mean well, to, you know, somebody from the LGBTQ community, they hear that and go, that's hate. In a lot of ways, we have brought that on ourselves by dehumanizing LGBTQ persons and things like that. And I think we need to repent of that and just acknowledge the fact that bridge building from here on will be that much more difficult. And so using this harsh rhetoric then is not going to help.
It's not helpful.
It's not helpful. And by harsh rhetoric, I don't mean like calling things for what it is, or at least what you think it is.
What has always been a standard within the Bible, you know, whether we disagree on different passages or, you know, how we interpret different things, there's essentials that we come together on. But most of all, it says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and love your neighbors. Love is that key.
Yeah.
And we overstep that, you know, so many times by finger pointing and, you know, this is what you should be doing.
Yeah, and I think a lot of Christians would recognize that and want to love our neighbors. But I think where we go wrong is some Christians, by love, what they mean is accept. And there's that confusion there, right?
And
that we have to...
Yeah.
Right? I've said this many times, and I can't emphasize that enough. Like, we need to treat them like we would treat anybody else.
Yeah.
But... Yeah. When you're asked for your convictions on this issue, you might want to do this tactfully. Don't step back and just tell them what you actually think it is, right? How you do that is up to you, but I don't think you should compromise your message because then you're not doing that person any service and you risk being dishonest.
Yeah.
I think we can probably walk away from this episode with a few things. Just to quickly summarize, one, get yourself informed on this curriculum thing. And if you live in a place where this hasn't impacted you yet, chances are it's going to come your way too. So maybe take a look at what's happening, you know, on this side of the world, and just get yourself informed and be prepared. Secondly, yeah, get involved. I would say get involved politically. Go out there and let your voice be heard. That is your prerogative as a citizen of this great country. And I think this goes both for Canada and the U.S. and the U.K., you know, wherever you go there.
Yeah.
And I think thirdly, also start at home. Talk to your kids. Start early and, you know, celebrate who they are as boys and girls, right? And let's do that early. And I think finally, let's be cognizant of the fact that we do have this image problem. I think we all agree with that. And so know that how we present ourselves to the LGBTQ community and the public in general is going to matter. Even when you're bringing the truth, how you bring the truth to the table will matter a lot in terms of how this message is going to be, how this truth is going to be received.
Amen, brother. Preach it.
All right. So obviously this is a huge topic and we would love to keep talking, but time is against us and we'll have to come back to this maybe another time. Thank you for joining us, listeners. The Apologetics Canada podcast has been a ministry of Apologetics Canada, and we'll come back next week with more stuff to think about. Ciao for now.